It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Israel moves reinforcements to the Gaza border, and U.S. warns of terrorist attack on Ugandan airport. I'm Bill Michaels, reporting from Washington. The Israeli army is moving troop reinforcements toward the border with Gaza after an increase in rocket fire from the Palestinian territory. Israeli jets struck targets in Gaza Thursday, while militants continued sending rockets into southern Israel. The violence comes amid mounting tension over the killing of an Arab teenager in East Jerusalem and a suspected revenge killing for the murder of three Israeli teens. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu tried to calm the situation.
I unequivocally condemn the murder of a Palestinian youth in Jerusalem a few days ago. The police investigation is ongoing. We don't know yet the motives or the identities of the perpetrators, but we will. We will bring to justice the criminals responsible for this despicable crime, whoever they may be. Murder, riots, incitement, vigilantism. They have no place in our democracy.
You can read more about this story on our website at voanews.com. The U.S. Embassy in Uganda has warned of a possible terrorist attack on Entebbe International Airport, 40 kilometers south of the capital, Kampala. The embassy said on its website that, according to intelligence sources, there was a specific threat that an unknown terrorist group would attack the airport Thursday, July 3rd, between 9 and 11 p.m. local time. The deadline passed without incident. The embassy said it received information on the threat from the Uganda police force. In an interview with VOA, Uganda's Inspector General of Police, Kale Kehura, said he gave no such warning to the embassy, but said police have taken extra measures to protect the airport. He also said the airport is safe. The U.S. military has acknowledged having expanded presence in Somalia, helping African and Somali government forces battle Islamist insurgents. A spokesman for the U.S. Africa Command told VOA Thursday that a limited number of trainers and advisors in a small military coordination cell are in Somalia to support African Union peacekeepers and Somali security forces. Spokesman Benjamin Benson said the total number of personnel is small, adding that they have operated in groups that have moved in and out of multiple locations. The comments come one day after Reuters news agency, citing an Obama administration official, reports there are up to 120 U.S. military personnel on the ground across Somalia. The U.S. economy enjoyed a big surge in hiring last month, with employers adding 288,000 jobs in June. The better-than-expected gains pushed the unemployment rate to a 5.5-year low and helped boost stock prices to new highs. Bill Arcega has more.
Good news for job seekers. More people went back to work and unemployment fell from 6.3 to 6.1%. That's the lowest since September 2008. Another sign that the U.S. recovery may finally be hitting its stride. Wall Street welcomed the better-than-expected data, sending the Dow Jones Industrial Average to a new milestone above 17,000 points. But analysts warn against too much investor exuberance. Despite the improving jobs picture, 9.5 million Americans are still out of work, and the number of people taking part-time jobs continues to rise. Still, the number of people out of work longer than 27 weeks has declined. Mil Arcega, VOA News, Washington.
China and South Korea have agreed to expand economic ties and reaffirm their commitment to a denuclearized Korean peninsula as Chinese President Xi Jinping began a state visit Thursday to Seoul. World Cup action resumes today. European powers France and Germany face off in a quarterfinal match in Rio de Janeiro. France has beaten Germany in four of their past six matches, but last won the World Cup in 1998. Friday's other quarterfinal showdown pits five-time champion Brazil against Colombia, which has never won the cup and is playing in its first ever quarterfinal game. From Washington, I'm Bill Michaels.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 4th, U.S. Independence Day. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Nearly 3 months after more than 200 Nigerian schoolgirls were abducted, advocates say the world is forgetting them.
The unfortunate part is that, you know, we are now in a world of, you know, life cycle news where everything is, you know, 2 days and it's out of everybody's memory.
Omolola Adele Oso is one of the organizers of a rally in Washington, D.C. Pakistani teenage activist Malala Yousafzai speaks out in support of the Nigerian girls. The World Health Organization says more community engagement is needed to stop the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. And the African Union calls for a national dialogue in Mali.
We want to have a durable peace in Mali. So any attempt, any initiative, any effort that could contribute to achieving that, the African Union is in support of that.
Isaka Suare is the special advisor to the African Union head of mission in Mali. A top U.S. official warns South Sudan warring parties of accountability for crimes against humanity. And today is Independence Day in the United States. We'll have a report on some exceptional documents in American history. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. It's been almost 3 months since more than 200 schoolgirls were abducted by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram in northern Nigeria. The kidnapping made headlines worldwide, and several countries, including the United States, promised to help bring the girls back to their families. But as Mariama Diallo reports, the girls are still missing, and advocates for their return are growing frustrated.
3 weeks after the girls were kidnapped by Boko Haram, demonstrations demanding action took place in many cities, including Washington.
Girls are not for sale.
The hashtag Bring Back Our Girls trended on social media, along with a photo of the U.S. First Lady holding up a sign to show her support. But nearly 90 days after the abduction, there are those who feel the drive and the passion to find the girls seems to have diminished. Omolola Adele Osho was the lead organizer of a rally in front of the Nigerian embassy in Washington. She spoke to us via Skype.
The unfortunate part is that, you know, we are now in a world of, you know, life cycle news where everything is, you know, 2 days and it's out of everybody's memory. Right after the rally, then, you know, the issues of Iraq, the rescued soldier from Afghanistan, you know, all these things have been happening, especially in American news.
Some say because of the new demands in Iraq, the U.S. has scaled back its intelligence and surveillance mission in Nigeria. Pentagon spokesman Rear Admiral John Kirby refutes that presumption and says that since the original surge of efforts, the U.S. has been joined by more coalition partners.
Well, are we flying exactly as many flights as we were at the outset? No. But the same level of effort is being sustained now internationally by everybody.
Mary Harf, the State Department spokesperson, says the U.S. still maintains a significant level of cooperation.
Obviously, the kidnapping, other attacks that have happened since then have prompted us to increase our assistance, to do more training, to do more to boost the capacity of the Nigerian military and of the Nigerian government.
As days pass, Sylvester Okere, a Nigerian-American businessman and advocate, says time is running out.
Some of these girls are already getting pregnant. These are someone's children. This could be my daughter. I have an 18-year-old daughter. I have a 12-year-old daughter. This could be my child. This could be my sister.
Since the schoolgirl's abduction, other attacks have taken place and more people have been kidnapped. Omolola Adele Osho says her group is planning another rally in Washington on July 14th and still holds the Nigerian government accountable.
Why is it that we cannot negotiate with Boko Haram? If it is money they want, give them money. 60 more women were taken. You know, why is it that it's so hard for the Jonathan administration to do something?
But as support dies down in some places, new people have joined the global campaign to free the Nigerian girls, like thousands of Filipino students who recently rallied in Manila. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Pakistani teenage human rights activist Malala Yousafzai is speaking out in support of the more than 200 Nigerian schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram militants. Viewers Carla Babb has more.
When girls are targeted by terrorists, no matter where they are in the world, it hits home for Malala Yousafzai. In 2012, Yousafzai was shot and nearly killed by the Pakistani Taliban because of her efforts to promote education for women and girls. The attack only amplified her voice. She tells VOA in an exclusive interview that it is now her duty to speak up for the more than 200 teenage girls kidnapped by Islamic radical group Boko Haram in Nigeria.
I stand up with those girls for their rights, and I request the whole world that they should also raise their voices for those girls.
In April, Boko Haram abducted the girls from a secondary school in the Nigerian town of Chibok. The militants killed hundreds of students, both male and female, in previous attacks on schools. The group's name in Hausa means Western education is a sin.
I believe that every girl has the right to go to school. And girls in Nigeria also have the right to go to school. It's the right to go to school to get education, as it is the right of girls in the developed countries.
Just last week, suspected Islamist militants carried out another mass kidnapping in the region, seizing 60 women and girls. Yousafzai is worried for their safety.
We don't know in what conditions those girls are. They are all alone, they are without their families, and no one knows what feelings they would have at this time.
Nigerian authorities have been unable to rescue the girls, despite intelligence and surveillance help from the United States and other countries. Officials have expressed concern that any military operation to free the girls would endanger their lives. Carla Babb, VOA News, Washington.
The World Health Organization says more intense engagement with local communities is needed to stop the increasingly deadly Ebola outbreak in West Africa. Strategies for containing the outbreak were discussed this week in Ghana's capital, Accra, where health ministers from 11 African countries met with the WHO and partner organizations. Jennifer Lazuta has more from VOA's West Africa Bureau in Dakar.
High-level health officials from 11 African countries say they have agreed on strategies for stopping the spread of the Ebola virus as quickly as possible. The World Health Organization, WHO, says there have been at least 759 Ebola cases and that 467 people have died across Liberia and Sierra Leone since the outbreak began in February. Despite response efforts by local and international teams, the number of cases and deaths continue to rise on an almost daily basis. Pierre Formenti, an Ebola specialist with the WHO, outlined the three main priorities that health officials agreed on.
The first is to engage more in depth and more intense manner with the community and to have them at the center and the pillar of the communication and also the surveillance and the control of the Ebola outbreak. Second, we are going also to intensify our surveillance system, detecting cases of Ebola, and also intensive follow-up of contact with the primary objective to stop the chain of transmission.
Formenti said the third priority is to increase the capacity of treatment centers and improve the quality of treatment, while ensuring families that health workers are doing everything they can to reduce the high mortality rate. Because there is no way to prevent or cure Ebola, the only way to stop the spread of the virus is to isolate those that fall sick and prevent them from infecting others. Health officials say that a number of factors have made it difficult, however, to stop this outbreak, including the highly mobile nature of people in the region and the continuation of traditional burial practices in which people touch the body of the dead. Many communities, particularly in rural areas, remain highly suspicious of foreign doctors and nurses. Some hide out when sick. Others even deny the existence of Ebola. Formenti said that better community cooperation is needed to bring the outbreak to an end.
We need all and everybody to stop an outbreak of Ebola. It's with the population and with the family and with the affected population that we'll be able to control this outbreak. The medical team alone cannot stop Ebola. We really need to work together.
Formenti said that in addition to implementing these strategies in the infected countries, health ministries from other West African countries will prepare action plans in case the disease spreads to other countries. Jennifer Lazuta for VOA News, Dakar.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, July 4th, U.S. Independence Day. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. The African Union-led international support mission to Mali has called for a national dialogue as part of an effort to improve security and stabilize in the West African nation following recent violence in the country's north that left scores dead. Mali is still recovering from the 2012 overthrow of former President Amadou Toumani Touré. Isaka Suare, the special advisor to the head of mission and former Burundian President Pierre Buyoya, tells reporter Peter Clotty the mission is working with the Malian government and other stakeholders to find answers to the country's problems.
We want to have a durable peace in Mali. So any attempt, any initiative, any effort that could contribute to achieving that, the African Union is in support of that. And particularly coming in a context of confrontations that were recorded in the city of Kidal on the 17th and 21st of May, in which many people died. That signifies to us a need for there to be an inclusive dialogue so that Mali can come out of the current situation of fragile peace, or which some can describe as no peace, no war in some part of the country.
In the AU capacity in supporting this effort, what else can you do in order to ensure that both sides trust each other enough that they will dialogue among themselves and try to find a solution following these recent skirmishes that left a lot of people dead?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And that is for the African Union to act as an honest broker, but also to ensure that the other actors of the international community whose interventions are important in this process intervene with one voice, that in support of the common objectives of this whole process. There are certain principles that I think we have passed: respect for Mali's sovereignty, territorial integrity, and its secular and republican character. These are principles that have been accepted even by the movement within the Ouagadougou Agreement. So beyond that one, the African Union supports this one, and it tries first to encourage the parties to go, because that is not a given. So to encourage the parties, to persuade them and conscientize them about the fact that dialogue is the only way out of the current situation.
What are some of the challenges that the AU mission in Mali has been facing, and how are you addressing them vis-a-vis your mission to help the country resolve some of its problems?
The country has many other challenges. And if you are engaged with the authorities of that country, you are wanting to focus on certain issues, but you understand also that the authorities of that country have to deal with an array of issues.
Isaka Suare is the special advisor to the African Union's head of mission in Mali. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotin from the capital, Bamako. A top United Nations official has warned South Sudan warring parties that there will be consequences if they failed to hold accountable those who have committed crimes against civilians. Philip Aliu of VOA South Sudan in Focus program has more from Juba.
Stephen Feldstens, Deputy Assistant U.S. Secretary of State for the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights and Labor, issued the warning after meeting this week with various stakeholders to the stalled peace talks in Addis Ababa. He says the United States is deeply concerned about reports of human rights violations committed by both foreign and anti-government forces, and will hold the leaders of both sides responsible if action is not taken.
At the moment, economic sanctions are not on the table, but we are talking about individual sanctions, which we already have done, and which we are in the process of considering whether further ones may be warranted for those who are most responsible for some of those violations. So we're thinking about all options right now.
While there must be accountability for crimes committed, Feldstein also says both sides must return to the peace talks in Addis to avert looming famine, and those talks must be inclusive.
Ultimately, our goal, as is the goal I think for most people in South Sudan, is to find a way back to a sustainable and enduring peace. And in order to do that, we need to make sure that all stakeholders are involved. that we're not just talking to a few people. It's not just a conversation that involves the government and the opposition, but involves civil society, church groups, and many others to have an open dialogue about what has happened and what needs to occur as we move forward.
Feldstein says the United States will not impose a solution on South Sudanese leaders, but will do what it can to ramp up the peace process. At the same time, he says the U.S. is working closely with the United Nations to document allegations of atrocities committed during the fighting.
On the one hand, we do believe some sort of mechanism of accountability needs to be in place, but we don't want to actually specify what that should be. We think that's something that needs to be owned both by the population in South Sudan and an African-owned solution. And so, therefore, we are pressing for principles right now.
He says the top priority for the warring parties now is to observe the cessation of hostilities agreement and to reach a comprehensive peace deal. The UN and right agencies have said both sides have committed what could amount to crimes against humanity, including rape, murder, arbitrary arrests, torture, and targeted killings based on ethnicity. The UN says more than 1.3 million people have been uprooted from their homes since fighting erupted nearly 7 months ago. For VOA News, I am Philip Aleu in Juba.
Today, July 4th, is the day that the American colonies in 1776 adopted the Declaration of Independence, formally announcing their separation from Great Britain. A rare copy of the Declaration, written by hand by Thomas Jefferson, is on display in New York's main public library, and nearby at another library is one of the very few original copies of the national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner. VOA's Bernard Schussman reports from New York.
This is the document visitors come to see in New York's public library. A version of the Declaration of Independence, handwritten by Thomas Jefferson, who later became America's third president. The document is special not only because of what's on the page, but also because of the things that didn't make it into the final declaration. Library Director Ann Thornton explains.
Jefferson wrote out this copy of the Declaration in his own hand, and he underlined the passages that were not included in the final version because he was distressed about what didn't end up in that final version. And the portion on the slave trade, as we understand it, was removed in order to appease the southern colonies.
Jefferson owned slaves and yet calls the trade a cruel war against human nature itself. This is one of only 11 known copies that contain the lines on slavery, and they provide a unique insight into the push and pull of creating a nation. Visitors agree.
Told the girls how rare it is to be able to get a chance to see the Declaration of Independence. So we thought it'd be a great opportunity for them to learn about our nation's past.
Clearly it was a very significant part in their history and the changing of history.
A great opportunity to be able to see it in with my own two eyes.
A few blocks away is the Morgan Library, one of only 11 known copies of the original sheet music of the Star-Spangled Banner is kept here. The lyrics come from a much longer poem written in 1814 by Francis Scott Key, but didn't become the national anthem until 1931. Francis Barulik, curator of music manuscripts at the Morgan, says this first edition is special because of a simple mistake.
Thomas Carr, who's a publisher in Baltimore, wanted to get in on the success of this piece, and he published it. But he was in such a rush that he made a typo. Instead of saying a patriotic song, he dropped the T and it's patriotic song. So you can always identify the first edition by that misspelling.
But it's the flaws and struck passages that make these documents an important part of a young nation's development and add a human dimension beyond the messages that continue to resonate and inspire. Bernard Schussman, VOA News, New York.
It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Oma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. A little-known 18-year-old Kenyan, Ronald Kwemoi, clocked 3 minutes and 31.48 seconds in the men's 1500 meters to steal the limelight at the IAAF Diamond League in Lausanne, Switzerland on Thursday. Fellow Kenyan Jairus Kipchoge Birech maintained his dominant performance in the 3,000-meter steeplechase, covering the distance in 8 minutes and 3.34 seconds. Kenyan world 800-meter champion Eunice Jepkoech prevailed in the two-lap race in 1 minute and 58.48 seconds, while Kenya's Mercy Cherono scored an early victory over Ethiopian world indoor champion Genzebe Dibaba in the women's 3,000 meters. Ivory Coast's Muriela Hore clocked 10.898 seconds to place second in the women's 100 meters. Meanwhile, the Diamond League continues in Paris, France tomorrow, Saturday. Sudan's Abubakar Kaki looks set to compete in the 800 meters as Botswana's Amantle Monsho will compete in the women's 400 meters. In steeplechase, Sofia Assefa of Ethiopia and Kenya's Milka Chemos Cheiwa clash, while in women's 200 meters, Blessing Okagbare looks favorite to win. In the men's 5,000 meters, Yeneo Alamireo of Ethiopia clashes with Kenya's Caleb Ndiku Mwangangi. On the infield, Egypt's Ehab El Sayed looks set to compete with Kenya's Julius Yego. Turning to rugby, Kenya beat Madagascar 34-0 as Namibia came from behind to beat Zimbabwe 24-20 in the Africa 2015 Rugby World Cup qualifiers in Antananarivo, Madagascar. Kenya lead the contest with 10 points. Zimbabwe are second, Namibia third, while Madagascar lie fourth. Tomorrow, Saturday, are the final rounds of the competition, where Kenya plays Zimbabwe as Namibia battle Madagascar for the sole ticket to the World Cup set for England and Wales next year. Turning to football, finally, Germany play France in Rio de Janeiro as Brazil engage Colombian Fortaleza in quarterfinal action at the FIFA World Cup in Brazil. Tomorrow, Saturday, Argentina play Belgium in Brasilia, while the Netherlands take on Costa Rica in Salvador. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We'll see you on Monday morning. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, July 4th.
Dear VOA, I was gratified to be reminded that a commemoration of July 4th, marking the celebration of 238 years of independence in the United States, was less than 3 days ahead. I therefore like to seize this opportunity through your magic medium to join with the global community in sending my best wishes to the U.S. President Barack Hussein Obama-led administration and the good people of the United States on the occasion of this great historic event. Thank you. Your loyal listener, Ambrose Ajio from Makurdi in Benue State of Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your commitment. Please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A top UN health official says West Africa's Ebola outbreak could last several more months. That's it for this Friday, July 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Mark Oman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everybody a very good weekend.
Tuesday on Health Chat, we'll talk about love therapy with our guest, Dr. Sue Johnson, clinical psychologist, author, and an expert in the field of couples therapy. Email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call in during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.